Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning and welcome to another week here on Africa Link. I am Abubakar Jallo, reporting live from Bonn, Germany. In the next 25 minutes, Ghana's ruling National Democratic Congress Party launches its manifesto ahead of the country's general elections in December.
We have been candid and frank with the people of Ghana, and we have demonstrated that we take them more seriously, even as we come back to them to seek a new mandate to govern this country.
Police in Zimbabwe fire live ammunition on protesters in a wave of demonstrations against President Robert Mugabe's government.
We have a positive duty as Zimbabweans to disobey this regime, this rogue regime. We are dealing with a dangerous, deranged, delusional dictator in the form of Robert Mugabe, and we are not going to give him rest.
Plus a final episode of Learning by Ears, Journey to the Promised Land. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Now, coming up shortly, fighting between rival rebel groups in the Central African Republic has killed at least 20 people, and a powerful car bomb in Somalia has left a Somali military general and five of his bodyguards dead. But first, Ghana's ruling National Democratic Congress Party has launched its manifesto ahead of the upcoming general elections in December. Now, in the manifesto, President John Mahama promises to improve the economy and create more jobs. Isaac Kaleji reports now from the capital, Accra.
Are you ready for John Mahama? Let me see your hand!
Jubilant supporters of the ruling National Democratic Congress, NDC, at its manifesto launch in Bono Ahafo region of Ghana. During the launch, President Mahama said his party will focus on improving the economy and job creation, among others, as well as improving infrastructure.
I encourage you all to study the manifesto and vote for the NDC in the presidential and parliamentary elections. We have been candid and frank with the people of Ghana, and we have demonstrated that we take them more seriously, even as we come back to them to seek a new mandate to govern this country. We invite you to assess all the gains we have made since they gave us their last mandate in 2012 and relate them to what we have committed to doing for the people of Ghana from next year, 2017.
But the opposition New Patriotic Party, NPP, says many of the promises contained in the NDC manifesto were copied from series of promises its flag bearer, Nana Addo, made during his campaign trails recently. Nana Akumia speaks for the NPP.
We said we'll do one district, one factory. They said it cannot be done. And when we show them we can do it, now day two, they have plans of doing it. Which government would scoff at the idea of doing factories? We said we'll do create a region for the northern part of the West. Cannot be done. What is he talking about? Now he says he'll do five.
The NPP is yet to make public its manifesto. It is anticipated that will take place in October. But development analyst Professor David Miller says the parties should focus on what they can do for Ghana instead of engaging in cheap talk on who owns which ideas.
We need to have some continuity in the growth of our country from the political leaders, and we don't get it. The discourse is that, oh, you stole this from me. Don't look at my notes. This is kindergarten. That's how I went to school. Now, for people to come up with manifestos, this one is waiting for that one. Then all of a sudden, oh, you stole my idea. So let's stop that bickering. It's too childish to find leaders say that this is mine, don't take.
The NPP and the NDC are, however, not yet done on this battle of sole ownership of ideas. Electorates have begun analyzing the current manifesto of the NDC, which is being serialized in simplified format. They are, however, awaiting that of the NPP to make an informed decision in the elections.
Isaac Kaleji reporting from Accra on the upcoming Ghanaian elections. And some news brief now. Fighting between rival rebel groups in the Central African Republic has killed at least 20 people. The violence erupted on Friday between the Muslim ex-Seleka rebels and Christian anti-Balaka fighters in the town of Ndomete. The fighting spread into Saturday, 6 miles across to Kagabondoro city center. 19 others were also injured in the fight. In Somalia, a powerful car bomb has killed a military general and 5 of his bodyguards in the capital Mogadishu on Sunday. General Mohamed Gombale and his bodyguards were killed when a suicide car bomber then detonated a vehicle laden with explosives near Somalia's defense military compound in Mogadishu. That was Abdi Fatah Omar Al Halane, the spokesman for the Banadiri region, speaking there. The Somali militant extremist group Al Shabaab has claimed responsibility for that attack.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The police in Zimbabwe have been accused of using live ammunition on protesters over the weekend in yet another wave of demonstrations against President Robert Mugabe's government. Opposition parties had planned nationwide protests to press the Zimbabwean government to effect electoral reforms. The Southern African country will hold its general elections in 2018, but opposition parties feel the current electoral laws favour long-time ruler President Mugabe's regime. Privilege Moshanri filed this report.
Opposition parties under the National Electoral Reforms Agenda, NERA, had called for nationwide demonstrations that were to be held at constituents level. Zimbabwe has 210 parliamentary constituencies. The parties are pressing government to reform electoral laws ahead of general elections coming in 2018. The parties accuse 92-year-old President Mugabe and his ruling ZANU-PF party of using biased electoral laws to stay in power. Police have been accused of using excessive force on protesters and are alleged to have used live ammunition during the weekend protests. Douglas Mwanzora, who is the Secretary General of the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change, led by the former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai, describes what happened.
Live ammunition was fired from a truck which was being used by the police and the militia, and this truck is South African number plates. It was a Ford Ranger. We took the registration numbers, but we also know that the registration numbers are false. So they used live ammunition, and as a result, 2 people were injured as a direct result of the shooting.
The Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights also confirmed in a statement saying dozens of opposition party supporters, including members of parliament, were charged for participating in public gatherings with intention to cause violence. Speaking via telephone, police spokesperson Superintendent Paul Nyati denied the use of live ammunition on protesters.
That's a false statement, evidence on the ground, and which anyone can conclusively confirm there is no live bullets which have been used by the police. And whoever is making such allegations should come forward and prove their so-called allegations.
Opposition parties and civic society pressure groups claim suspected state-sponsored militia is targeting active participants and coordinators of the recent wave of anti-government protests. Last week, one activist was abducted in the night at his home. He was tortured and left for dead in bushes outside Harare. Douglas Mwanzora says opposition parties will remain defiant despite threats of arrests and abductions.
We have a positive duty as Zimbabweans to disobey this regime, this rogue regime. We are dealing with a dangerous, deranged, delusional dictator in the form of Robert Mugabe, and we are not going to give him rest. We are going to be demonstrating every Friday without notice to the police.
Last week, police issued a prohibition order banning all demonstrations in central Harare until mid-October. Opposition parties and civic movements are challenging the order. The High Court is expected to hear 2 urgent applications filed on Friday this Monday.
Privilege Moshanri in Harare reporting there on government crackdown on opposition activities. Now, DW's crime fighters are back. Join us on September 26th for a new exciting series about cybercrime. Here's a taste of what will be coming.
I can't believe anyone would stab Sawati, of all people. She's the sweetest person I know, the best friend I've ever had.
There was this guy called Zake on Twari, you know, the social media website. This guy was always liking Zawadi's photos and commenting on them all the time.
So you think this man, Zake, stabbed Zawadi?
I know it's a long shot, but there has been an increase in cybercrime lately, and crimes related to social media use.
Oh my goodness! Are those pictures of Zawadi?
We head now to Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, where a number of African countries have been participating in the Paralympics Games, which closed on Sunday. The West African nation of Guinea-Bissau was also there, but with just one athlete competing. DW's Jesse Wingard caught up with him at the athlete's village to find out what life is like for a Paralympian in his home country.
One of 10 children, Cesar Lopez Cardoso's life growing up in Guinea-Bissau with a disability was not easy. Born with a non-functioning left arm, Cesar took up running as a para-athlete at the age of 21. But the road to Rio hasn't been easy. Cesar has hit a number of hurdles when it came to participating in the sport he loved.
We have any difficulty in Guinea-Bissau to do the sport. It's not only to do sport, for all the people. The government is not recognized the person of disability in my country.
This lack of recognition made obtaining appropriate equipment, upgrading facilities to make them accessible, and even having resources for people with disabilities in Guinea-Bissau a big challenge, Cesar says.
I think this is difficult for one athlete. When you don't have a good condition to training, to go anywhere, to make a mark, that is a very difficult for one athlete. I want to say my government to give the condition for athletes.
But what needs to be addressed and overcome most, Cesar adds, is the stigma towards people with a disability in Guinea-Bissau and right across the African continent.
I want to say my people in Africa is recognize the person of disability because the person disability is good person.
Since making his debut on the Paralympic Games stage in London in 2012, the first time Guinea-Bissau ever participated at a Paralympics, the impact the 100-metre sprinter's participation has had on changing those attitudes has had some bearing. But there is still a long way to go, says Guinea-Bissau's National Paralympic Committee General Secretary, Miguel Sapayo.
Future is to work hard, it involves more people to find more athletes. That is a change, it must be happen, and it's a long journey, but it must happen.
Seeing the people with a disability can achieve great things will hopefully inspire others and help bring about significant cultural change, adds Miguel.
When everybody understands what is Paralympic mean, what is the movement is, and to do that, we must work all together to change mentality in my country, to respect the disabled people, to have accessibility, and the legislation and everything. Very important inclusion. That means you can't see a disabled like a disabled, but like as a person. That must be implemented in my country to everybody understand inclusion, what this means.
Cesar plans to use his status not only as the country's only para-athlete to compete in the Rio de Janeiro Paralympic Games, but as the head of Guinea-Bissau's Paralympic movement to champion the need for disability inclusion. Change, he says, which is needed right across Africa.
DW's Jesse Wingard reporting from Rio's Paralympics Games. And it's time now for Learning by Ear's last episode of Journey to the Promised Land.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Learning by Ear. This is the 15th and final episode of our radio drama entitled The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda called her mother at midnight in distress to ask her forgiveness, but she wouldn't tell her mother what was wrong. After escaping from the detention center, Chivasi was working illegally as a gardener for a European man named Ralph. When Ralph refused to pay him, Chivasi fled to Rhoda's house.
she gave him money to buy a train ticket to the capital where Linda is studying. Meanwhile, back at the detention center, Farahani was finally granted asylum, but couldn't believe his ears when he was told about the restrictions on refugees in Europe, not least that they are forbidden to do any paid work at all. The stage is set for the end of our story. What will happen to all our friends and their dreams of migrating to Europe? Stay tuned to find out in today's episode called Reverse Migration. We picked the story with Chivasi at the train station near the university campus, where he goes to the information desk to ask for directions.
Hello. Could you please tell me how I get to the university campus? I need the Faculty of International Law.
Sorry, but this is a train station information desk, not a tourist office.
Now listen, I have been through a lot lately. So please, if you know the way to the university, why don't you just tell me?
Okay. When you come out of the station, turn left, walk to the end of the road, then turn right on the main road and keep walking. After about 5 minutes, you see the campus in front of you.
Thank you for the information. Have a good day. Europeans and their crazy rules.
Chivasi's heart is thumping as he runs up the street, so close now to his beloved fiancée, Linda Maraga. A security guard at the campus gates tells him the way to her halls of residence. Images from their childhood keep flashing through his mind as he reaches the building and takes the stairs two at a time. Soon, he is standing outside room 316. There's a little label on the door, Linda Maraga.
Who is it? Okay.
Hello, my one and only.
Chivasi! This can't be real. You came. You
crossed the ocean for you, Linda. Like I said I would. Can I come in?
Oh, my.
Chivasi and Linda take time to tell the stories of their encounters and experiences in Europe. Chivasi is sad to hear about Linda's father's accident, and Linda is moved by Chivasi's account of everything he's gone through in order to be with her in Europe. Finally, she opens up and tells him about her fake marriage to Charles in order to get a work permit. Thank God she can put that behind her now. Just this morning, she received a letter informing her that the marriage had officially been annulled.
I'm so sorry, Chivasi. I put you through all those awful experiences. And all the time, I was married to someone else. And I never had the courage to tell you. I never had any kind of relationship with Charles. But I betrayed your trust and I broke my commitment to you. I'm so, so sorry. But now we can start again. The letter from court says I'm no longer married.
But why, Linda? The question is why? You promised that you'd be my wife. I'm going to turn myself into the authorities. I don't know what they'll do to me. I hope they don't send me to prison, that they'll simply deport me. I met someone who told me I should do it right. I think it's about time.
Chivasi, do you still want to marry me?
Linda, don't ask me that right now. I feel very confused. I don't know what I want anymore. I do know that I have to go home. Well, if you want to, you can come with me.
What do you think? Should Chivasi still take Linda as his wife after all that's happened? A few days later, Chivasi gives himself up to the authorities, and sure enough, he is deported immediately. Meanwhile, Farahani has been transferred to the refugee facility where the new life he dreamed of for so long is finally beginning, the life of a refugee in Europe.
This is not at all how I imagined. There's no freedom here. I feel like I don't belong, but I can't go back. No. Everyone there would laugh at me. I suppose it's okay, yeah? When I finally qualify for an apartment of my own, maybe things will get better. But I have no idea when that will be. I've still got no money. It'll be years before I'll be allowed to work.
Farahani is pretty disillusioned by the reality of his European dream. Meanwhile, back in Africa, Chivasi is back at his old job and going about his daily life. But it's not always easy because Linda is still in Europe and people keep telling him how stupid he was to decide to come back home. It's got so bad that he's had to block his Facebook page. Right now, he's round at Linda's parents' house visiting her father, who has fully recovered from his accident, and telling them how everyone's been reacting.
I'm serious. People think I'm crazy because I've chosen Africa over Europe.
Well, I can't blame them.
Yeah, that's true. But I do believe that there are all kinds of opportunities in Africa that often aren't fully exploited. I keep wondering why it is that so many of us want to go somewhere where these things are already up and running. We should start them right here in Africa.
You know, well, we used to think the same way too, but then we realized it was just a pipe dream. Africa does indeed have many opportunities, but they're only given to a select few. Look at Linda. If she hadn't been in Europe, who would have paid for my hospital bill?
I'm sorry, Mr. Maraga, but I beg to differ with you. I still believe it would have been better if Linda had finished her studies right here. She could still have got a job at a good law firm. She could even have started a practice of her own.
Oh, an international law firm here? And where would she get her clients?
Oh, that would never have been a problem. Look at all those cases of African politicians and leaders accused by the International Criminal Court in The Hague, for example. And the court has several offices in Africa. Believe me, those lawyers earn a lot of money.
All right. You do have a point, Shivasi. But I'm still glad she went abroad, even though her studies cost us everything we had.
Are we expecting another guest?
Not that I'm aware of. It's a bit late for visitors, huh? Shivasi, would you mind seeing who's at the door?
Sure.
Hello, my one and only.
Linda, what are you doing here?
Linda, is that you?
What? Linda is back.
Hi, everyone. Yes, I'm back, if that's okay with you.
You mean you're back for good? But what about your law studies?
I want to finish my studies right here at home, among the people that I love and who love me. Dad, how are you feeling?
What? I'm fine. What do you mean? You'll finish your studies here? You only have a year and a half to go.
Dad, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I've made up my mind. I'm going to finish my studies here.
Hey, is that what Shivasi told you when he came to see you?
Oh.
To abandon your life in Europe and come back here to this godforsaken continent?
No!
For what? So that the two of you could marry and you end up in the kitchen?
What?
Mom, please stop saying that. This has nothing to do with Shivasi. At least not in the way that you think. For your information, I only wish that what you said was true.
It's okay. Everyone, let's just calm down, eh? Linda's just got home and she's had a long journey. She's obviously very tired. We can talk about this again in the morning, huh? Welcome back, my daughter. It's always good to see you.
I think it's better if I go now.
Yeah, go.
You need time to catch up. Linda, it's nice to see you. Welcome home.
Thank you, Shivasi, but if you don't mind, please close the door and stay a while. What I have to say to Dad and Mom involves you too. It's about time I did it right as well.
Shivasi closes the front door to listen to what Linda has to say. And with that, we close the curtains on this 15th and final episode of our radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. What do you think will happen to Linda, Shivasi and Farahani? Do you think Florence and Charles should be freed or sent to prison? Most importantly, what's your opinion about migration to Europe and the issues we've addressed in this series? We welcome all your opinions, comments, and feedback. Do visit our online discussion forum at facebook.com/dw.lbe.
Well, happy ending there, at least for Shivasi and Linda. Isn't that what we all want in a story? Well, hope you enjoyed and learned as I did. The popular crime fighter series kicks off here on Africa Link next week. Now, a reminder of the stories we've covered for you. Ghana's ruling National Democratic Congress Party has launched its manifesto ahead of the upcoming general elections in December. Police in Zimbabwe have been accused of using live ammunition on protesters over the weekend in yet another wave of demonstrations against President Robert Mugabe's government. If you'd like to comment on this story, send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to +491609575950. And for more news, visit our website dw.com/Africa. I am Abubakar Jallo, and I will be right here with you again tomorrow. To join me if you can. Until then, bye now.